You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. There have been a lot of adaptations of Lovecraft over the years, most of which I wouldn't call actually adaptations of Lovecraft so much as here's a couple things we took out of a Lovecraft thing and we're putting H.P. Lovecrafts on top of it.
Yeah.
And other than that, not really a Lovecraft adaptation
and
at all.
And here's Cthulhu.
Yeah, and or not even that. Like, you know, the Reanimator is definitely the prime example of a H.P. Lovecraft's a thing that's barely based on a H.P. Lovecraft thing, if only because that's probably the best of all of them that are out there.
I mean, if you've ever read any H.P. Lovecraft, he's not exactly plot-heavy or big into things like character. He works a very narrow field, and yet he's very good at it.
Atmosphere and tone.
But yes, it does not lend
scary.
Itself to a narrative.
I'm going to tell you something. It's going to be scary, and you better sit down because it's scary. These people over here, they learn about it. Oh, they were so scared. Okay, you ready? You steady? Okay, I even got to catch myself. It's going to be so scary. Okay, ready? Tentacle monster! Ah, the end.
And then they saw something I can't describe to you because it would drive you insane.
It's always obviously, two or three people removed. I found a friend of mine told me this story, and he gave me this book in which a man recounts a legend that he was told by the... It's like, this kind of actually takes that idea that Lovecraft put into one of his best-known short stories and goes, you know what, we're not going to do it two or three removed. We're going to actually tell the story from the perspective of the family it happens
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I was going to say, before we even get there is one actual, genuine, this is a real adaptation of a Lovecraft story, and it's a short film called The Call of Cthulhu, which is actually really good. It's done as a black and white silent film, and it's really
it's
good.
It's got, like, stop motion animation, and it looks like a... Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, but that's a straight adaptation, but that's the only
everyone
one.
Get a handcrafted Cthulhu gift from their director like I did?
Tessa's on it, I think, right?
Okay.
Wait, what?
Making little handcrafted plushy Cthulhus or something?
Oh, yeah.
To hand out to everyone?
I was in an adaptation of Call of Cthulhu.
You just explained to the audience, we can't show you how this ends because you'd all go insane.
Exactly. I got stabbed in the neck with a pen. It was awesome.
For real?
Yes, for real.
Well, I don't know. Maybe there was an accident during, like, the play.
No, I freaked out the shawarma guy outside because there was all this blood dripping down my neck. It's like, I just want a shawarma. It wasn't real. I got murdered every night.
Oh, fair enough. But this is Color Out of Space, the most adapted H.P. Lovecraft material. It's been adapted, I want to say, four times, maybe five.
At least.
Because it's probably his most straightforward and accessible story. And while that being said, it's still pretty wild, wacky, very Lovecraftian stuff.
And actually, it's one of his most straightforward sci-fi movies. Mm-hmm. Or stories, I should say.
Yeah, space horror.
Yes, Lovecraft was into film. Sure. No.
But here's the other thing about this that makes this distinctive. Well, there's two things. First off, this is directed by Richard Stanley, who hasn't made a film since The Island of Dr. Moreau in 1996.
He was fired,
but it was also one of those things where when you watch there's a great documentary about the making of it. That whole thing was a giant clusterfuck of a movie. It's like Apocalypse Now if it turned out to not be a good movie.
Yeah.
It was like that degree of everything that could go wrong did go wrong.
Didn't
and it was
he like
just a mess.
Hide in the woods for a while? He had gotten so messed up.
And he was performing like Wiccan rituals.
Something
and stuff.
Like that.
He kind of went insane.
Was
he
on shrooms?
Wasn't the only one.
I feel like shrooms were involved.
Shrooms were involved for sure.
I don't know for a fact, but I'm pretty sure Richard Stanley has done some shrooms.
Elijah Wood and his Spectrovision company, production company, which does largely horror and sci-fi and weird stuff. I presume Elijah met him at Fantastic Fest when this documentary premiered for Island of Dr. Moreau a couple years back, and Jenkins was there and hung out the whole time and was a very nice guy. I definitely saw the two of them hanging out a lot. So he talked him to look, our company will produce a film for you. Yeah. We want you to come back and do films again. And that film is, in fact, this, Color Out of Space. And the third thing that's going to, and certainly the put butts in seats part of this film in terms of the strategy, is getting Nicolas Cage to play the lead role
for
in
better
the film.
Or worse.
For better or worse.
Or and mediocre.
And we will certainly explore that. The idea here is Nicolas Cage and his wife, played by Julie Richardson, they have moved out of the city into the country after his father has died, and they've inherited the big old country house They're it's making beautiful. they're making their try at yuppie farming, if you will. Light farming.
Yes, he's an artist, so he has an artist's idea of what farming is.
Yeah, llamas are the
alpacas. Cattle,
the alpacas. They are the animal of the future.
Yeah, well, for meat. And even his daughter's like, Dad, these alpacas are for sweaters.
Yeah. Not... Nobody kills alpacas.
You have three alpacas. You are not an alpaca farmer.
Yeah. I think he had five. I want to say he's
an alpaca enthusiast.
He's an alpaca enthusiast.
He's a hobbyist.
But they live there with their three children, all of which were like, oh, I've seen you in other things. But like at that point, you're like, but what were those things I saw you in? But Madeline Arthur, Brendan Meyer, and I am not. Oh, wait, who is the next last one? I don't see the name. Sorry. Anyway, little kid. Doesn't matter.
Tiny child.
And so they all live in this house together. Out on the outskirts of it, living in a shed on their property, is crazy hippie guy played by Tommy Chong. Certainly not a huge stretch for Tommy there. Who they're like, they basically say, he's kind of a transient, but we let him live out there. Yeah. He's harmless.
And sometimes he does work for us.
Yeah, sometimes he does work for them.
He used to be an electrician or something.
He steals cable for them.
I mean, the background, like the little bits of background plot we get is that the daughter is like into like witchcraft of some sort or another.
We open with that. Basically.
Yeah, we literally open
she's
with
in
seeing
the middle
her do
of a ritual.
Yeah, but it seems like she's like probably one of those nature white witch types.
Oh, yeah. She's very much the one that buys her sage from Whole Foods.
She listens to Stevie Nicks for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. She dresses like Stevie Nicks for sure.
She had a cloak while riding her horse barefoot. I mean,
who doesn't?
She's living her
that?
Best life, okay?
Yeah,
she is a moon goddess, damn it.
And we've also, it's insinuated
with me.
That the mom has had a probably double mastectomy and is still fighting cancer, and it's an issue between the family who are very concerned for her. The husband and wife have not been intimate for a while. That's brought up very specifically, but it's not, there's no anger. For sure. This is a family that is doing their best to all get along, such as it is. When one day a meteorite crashes in their backyard from outer space that glows purple and fucks it all up.
No, it's a color that he's never even seen before.
Fuchsia. He's never seen fuchsia.
He's never seen fuchsia. Most people haven't.
I thought he was an artist. Sorry.
Yeah. Not popular out in the country.
Yeah. Which is something that, you know, in the story, one of the problems with Lovecraft is that he is very much the type of guy that's like, I can't even tell you because it's so scary and crazy. And you can't do that in a visual medium.
Well, that's not a problem with Lovecraft. It's a problem with adapting Lovecraft.
Yes, that's what I mean.
And he describes a color that does not fit any known human spectrum.
So they do their best to do...
So it's fuchsia. Like, that's what it is.
It's rave fuchsia.
It's rave fuchsia. Yeah.
It's electric
color
fuchsia.
Out of space.
Yeah. Exactly.
You ever saw that Grace Jones movie, Vamp? It uses that much fuchsia.
Yes. I love that movie.
A lot of fuchsia neon colors.
I think it's been on a few Grateful Dead posters, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It definitely reacts to black light.
Yeah.
Is what we're saying.
And so their whole, they're like, what is this? Oh my God, like this thing, and it's glowing like crazy. And the next day, the meteorite's just gone, but they start seeing here and there little effects, like flowers that are very unusual. Although it did surprise me. No one's like, I'm pretty sure that's no flower I've ever seen before. What the fuck is that thing?
Well, they just moved out here, so they don't know what it does
they're,
seasonally.
They're not really good farmers.
No.
And everyone just starts acting a little bit off here and there. And meanwhile, there's this guy who is a hydrologist.
He does science.
He does science. That's what's important.
It's like, hey, you're a hydrologist. Could you look at this and tell me if I've got a skin disease? No, dude,
I'm
a hydrologist.
I'm not a dermatologist.
Oh,
sir.
You're a taxon... The
toxologist.
There we go. That's the word I was looking for.
Someone asked him.
Who's there? And he's kind of the science guy coming in and out, who has some sort of connection with the daughter, sort of, kind of. And
she thinks he's cute.
It's a meet cute. Yeah.
And hit it off.
But,
kind of.
I mean, it's not wildly relevant to the plot, but it's enough there to like make it where, okay, I'm concerned to what happened with what happens to the daughter. But the point is that he's starting to figure out, hey, whatever's going on, something's toxic and weird going on with your water supply.
Don't drink it if you can help it.
Yeah, exactly.
And they've already
had some whiskey with some ice in it. Yeah. They've cooked all their vegetables and
at
washed
that point,
them
you're
off.
Kind of by the
sure,
by
they
time
bathed
that,
occasionally.
By the time that they're told that this is could be an issue, even though we're not like even in the close to the third act, it's kind of that ship has sailed. Like things are going crazy. Nicolas Cage is turning into someone doing an impression of Donald Trump.
Yeah, we were trying to put our finger on it. We were listening to it for a while. And we're like, what is that?
Yeah,
I
was like, it was a weird New Yorker. And then you were like, it's Trump. It's like,
Oh, yeah, it's somebody doing a bad Trump impression.
Yeah, it's not even like he's doing an impression of someone doing a bad Trump impression. Yeah, but intermittently.
Yes, like, it's not gradual and it's not sequential. It's just like, being weird and Trumpy.
In the middle of a sentence, a single scene where he's talking, he'll go in and out of it. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing? What choice is this that you've made?
Yeah, it doesn't make... It often didn't make sense with the scene either. And it's like I said, if... You know, the reason that they hired him is because he's known to go up to 11. And when it gets to the end, yeah! But when it's barely started, no, go down to 3. 3. Yeah. That's a good number.
Yeah, you need to keep it down low.
You need to build.
And I hate to say it, and I think we're all on the same page here, and we all like Nicolas Cage, and I like seeing movies where he goes up to 11. Often he is the only saving grace of a bad film because he's the one going up to 11 and being totally insane.
Nicolas Cage, at least recently, I mean, look, I'll be the first to admit, Nicolas Cage is a very good actor. I've never understood the cult of Nicolas Cage. I mean, a little bit, maybe, but usually he pulls me out of a movie, and this movie was going so well until he started just really leaning into these weird choices because that's what people expect him to do. And usually we're okay with it because Nicolas Cage's whole career now is being memorable in basically forgettable films. This movie didn't have to be forgettable. This movie was actually working.
Yeah, it was building.
Until he did that. It was like this flavor of weird he didn't gel with it.
You know, going with back to adapting Lovecraft is that Lovecraft is the slow build. He is the virus that infects things. That's the whole point of his stories. And this was really good at doing that. It had, you know, the gradual, you know, you mentioned the flowers, and then later on there's the tomatoes that all of a sudden have fuchsia leaves, and you know, you see glimpses of colors in like animal eyes, and then all of a sudden the trees, all their leaves are...
And the behavior of...
And the behavior starts getting bigger. And so it was one of the few adaptations where it's like, you can feel the Lovecraft slow closing in build of the evil. And you didn't need... And you felt it, so you didn't need to have him being the quote-unquote saving grace of a bad film, because it was achieving what it was doing.
They were making a serious Lovecraft adaptation, and it was working. And then he steps in the middle, like the guy at the party who brings an acoustic guitar and turns the stereo off. You're like, what are you doing? We were having a good time. And then you got to be like, hey, everybody pay attention to me. Yeah, I think we all know that guy.
I really do wish that there were directors who could just stand up to him and say, Nick, please dial it down. This is not, let's talk about why this choice is not working. And I know people will go see a Nicolas Cage movie just because, like a train wreck. They just want to see it happen. They want to see it go off the rails. And I prefer it when he actually gives a performance and is paying attention to the movie that he's in. And that doesn't happen here. And it's such a damn shame because not only do we have a rare, good, faithful adaptation of Lovecraft, we finally get Richard Stanley back in the director's chair, and it is all kind of undone by the star.
Yeah, it's actually working, and it's certainly not perfect. I'm not going to pretend that it is, but it's the best adaptation of this story that has been yet put to film. All the others basically just turn them into space zombie films. This one is really kind of loyal to the original ideas of the story. It gets the tone exactly right. And like you said, every time you're actually starting to get really creeped out by this, Cage comes in and does that weird Trump accent or starts playing things way past the hilt where he should be at all. Just inexplicable decisions all throughout it where I'm like, again, the ideas you're supposed to be going crazy, but Jesus Christ, man, you just went immediately to top level.
Didn't you mention, Marco, that like the comparison at one point, Cage's character turns on the TV and he says, this is my favorite film and it's Marlon Brando.
Oh,
didn't you say that like, oh, that's Stanley's subtle nudge to be like, this is just being Brando.
Marlon Brando famously was one of the many, many things that went wrong.
Was a horrid person to work with.
Hard to work with. And one of the things that went wrong on Island of Dr. Moreau. And I felt like Richard Stanley kind of recognizes that in Cage. I could be reading too much into that. That could just be a little dig at Island of Dr. Moreau. But it's obviously he had a lot more control over this movie, and you can see what kind of good work you can get out of this guy when you just let him do what he knows how to do. And I'm sure, unlike Brando, Nicolas Cage is apparently a very easy guy to work with, very pleasant, very professional.
I've heard on the whole he's quite pleasant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this no is one has the balls to tell him, dude, stop.
This is what he thinks people want from him now. Yeah. And a lot of people do want this from him. And there's a lot of cases that's called for. And they're wrong to want that. There's a lot of cases where it is called for. In Mandy, it was perfectly in Mandy, it was perfectly set for that film. It was like him at 11 was perfect for Mandy. It was the right movie for that. This movie, it is completely out of place. And I felt like Stanley, Richard Stanley should have probably just gone, look, this just isn't that kind of movie. I want good actor Nicolas Cage. I want a guy who can take it in tiny steps towards there. Anyway, we bitched about Cage. Y'all get it. We're not thrilled with Cage's performance here. I do want to say this whole third act, once it goes full gonzo, is deeply impressive.
Yeah.
It gets crazy.
Well, the use of visuals throughout the whole thing is really, really good. You know, it starts off subtle, but you see these, you know, these fuchsia. It starts off this fuchsia praying mantis that comes out, and you know, having these bits of color, like, you know, a glint in an ice cube, and it's just like, you know that it's around, but it isn't overpowering until it starts to creep into the family, where it just becomes this explosion of color and explosion of craziness and distortion, and just visually it really takes you into this world of chaos. I would say the one time that I didn't like it was when it got kind of into a close-up of kind of what the aliens kind of were at one point. It was a very short moment, but it kind of, you saw kind of these little creature-y type things.
That reminded me of that scene in Slither where they did that, where someone got like the leech thing, the alien leech tried to like bite the girl, or like she...
And she had a vision of their world.
Yes, it was a lot like that scene in Slither.
Yeah, and it's like, no, I want it to stay a mystery. I just want to know that this thing is crazy. I don't want to really know anything beyond it other than evil aliens trying to take over the world. I don't need the specifics.
I mean,
of it.
I remember Marco saying largely something similar, that there's a lot of points in this film that it very directly reminds you how, in no uncertain terms, that this is a Lovecraft adaptation, down to there being a copy of the Necronomicon in the film, which is, you know, relevant
t-shirt.
Only in as such that a symbol from the book is represented as such in said, like, a visualized world.
The occult stuff also, I thought, failed for me. It just feels crammed in there just because that's kind of something that Richard Stanley is known to be interested in, and because, of course, it's associated with Lovecraft. One of the reasons I appreciate the short story is because it doesn't have anything to do with the occult. Like I said, it is a straight-up sci-fi. There's no magic. These are aliens.
I mean, it does tie into his whole, like ancient old ones from outer space, and even in the story of, like, the idea that this is from them, this is from their world, which is...
But we don't even see that.
To
it's
say
literally
that,
just a color.
That magic, as it were, I've always looked at in Lovecraft's term, being a sort of mathematics, if you will.
Well,
more than any sort of way we think of Tolkien thinking.
It just feels Necronomicon, you know, it's like an Easter egg. But it's not even an Easter egg, because you don't have to look for it. He just throws it right there.
Well, the magic in this, though... I mean, you could still consider this a sci-fi, because it felt to me like the magic was, you know, the moon goddess teenager trying to, you know, rebel against her parents. It's like, it was more just a trendy spirituality. And yes, she did do
but it doesn't tie into the plot at all.
Well, no, but it ties into her characterization. So I thought that was okay, personally.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I've always thought most people who embrace, you know, witchcraft at that level are just like people who have run out of ways to piss off their parents. You're just a middle class.
I'm not going
to
go there.
A whole bunch of people would be very angry.
I'm not
going to
go there.
Mark is going to get cursed by some witches now.
Wiccanism is a full fledged religion.
They're nice people, but it's like, look, you know, it's like, I get it. You were raised in the Christian faith. It sucked. But you're still spiritual. You hate religion, but you want some spirituality.
I mean,
so
I'm not going to
say this buffet religion that you could make up on your own.
I'm not going to say that's not the reason why some people first get into But same reason some people get into Scientology too, or whatever it is. You know, like if you switch midlife to something and fully go into it, it probably to some degree in your teenage years.
At least the Wiccans don't ask you for cash. I'll give them that.
That's true. Well, unless like everybody's putting in for a bag of weed.
Yeah, exactly. I'm down with that. This whole Scientology bullshit, like, here, you go, send us some more money and we'll send you a tape and a new book on how to
the point
get to
being
the next
is
level.
That it's the Wiccanism or whatever it is a color of her character.
It is, and
I don't
when
think
she
that
went
hurts
into
it.
The later ritual where it's like shit is going down. I'm going to try and do some heavy magic. I think that was her just being like, okay, here is a really, what is supposed to be a very powerful spell book. I'm going to try it. I don't really know what I'm doing other than what it tells me to do, but I'm going to do it because I can't think of anything
important else. Rule. The Necronomicon never fixes anything.
No, right. She's a teenager.
You know, the guy who wrote it is dead. So, I mean, and not of old age.
And everybody who read it went insane.
Yeah, Abdul Azared, I believe, was his name. Tessa, am I getting that right?
Who what?
The mad monk Abdul Azared, who wrote the Necronomicon.
I love the fact that talk about this like it's a real fucking thing.
No, well, you know, it's one of those fantasy worlds.
Have you met nerds?
It's one of those
fantasy... Haven't you read Tobin's Spirit Guide?
It's one of those fantasy worlds that I am all in on. So I talk about it as if it were. You know, and then later I'll talk about the Marvel superheroes.
I mean,
exactly
the Bible's
the same way.
Not real. I mean, have you ever seen one?
Oh boy, are we really doing this today? Okay.
Let's go to a few beers, kids.
Let's go to final thoughts. Mindy, get us started.
Well, as I said, I thought the pacing and the way that the movie flowed in regards to showing the creeping of the evil was really, really well done. I liked the fact that the evil was expressed in different ways, from the youngest son to the daughter to, you know, Nicolas Cage to the wife to, you know, everybody that it touched differently, but still evilly. like, ew, this is a crappy tomato, says
Donald
Trump.
Show me on this little octopus doll where Cthulhu touched.
Right?
But it does all, everybody has their own thing. Like, Nicolas Cage is like, I smelled this really bad
smell.
And the kid is like hallucinating people in the well talking to him.
Yeah. The mom, you know, injures herself. I mean,
everybody has their own distinctive
thing. People get morphed together. It's weird.
Yeah. And Cronenberg shows up at some point and just starts piecing people together.
Right.
So, yeah.
So I thought it was very... So not only was it very beautiful, it was also very, it wasn't the same, so it didn't get stale. Like we said before, you know, Nicolas Cage was a detriment because it was very, it reminded me of years and years ago, I watched a version of Much Ado About Nothing where it was obvious the guy who played Dogberry was hired because he was a comedian from like British TV, and he did not fit the story, and he took everybody out of this amazing performance of everybody else. So it's like
he made it all about him.
Yeah, he made it all about him, and that's what Nicolas Cage did, albeit not as bad as that dude. Ooh, he was bad. but you know, when he went into his fake Donald Trump, it was like, what the hell? Yeah, what are you doing?
Weird choice.
Yeah, what is this choice? I really liked the daughter. You know, she had the potential to be really irritating based on, I'm rebelling against my parents and I'm going to ride my horse barefoot through the night and with my sage and I'm smudging. You know, she had the potential to be a really irritating, stereotypical teenager.
By the way, she
actually
played one of the big roles in To All the Boys I've Loved Before, which was a huge hit on Netflix.
Okay.
I didn't see it either, but I'm like, oh, a teen romantic comedy on Netflix? I'm not watching that. And then people were like, it's actually pretty good, dude. Like, what's happening right now? It's Lovecraft. Something's happening. Everybody, you saw The Color Out of Space, didn't
right?
you?
I do think that if they were going to have Tommy Chong in it, they really should have used his character. They could have cut him from the film and nothing really would have changed. So it was like, why hire a name if you're going to do that to the character? But otherwise, it's a really solid adaptation. So I will give it 8 stuffed dinosaur plushies out of 10.
Marco?
For a moment there, I really thought this was going to be the best Lovecraft adaptation I've seen in a very long time. I was really excited to see that. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. And we mentioned Tommy Chong. I mean, it's saying something when Tommy Chong gives a much more restrained and grounded performance than Nicolas Cage.
Truth.
And, you know, it's so weird that, you know, I know without his name, this movie doesn't get made. That's too bad. But I could probably sit down. I think all of us could think about half a dozen, you know, actors of the same age who would be able to knock this out of the park and actually make you feel the tragedy of a loving father and husband who goes insane. Unfortunately, we have Nicolas Cage. And if you guys like the Nicolas Cage crazy, congratulations. You're going to get it here. You'll probably be happy just know you destroyed a perfectly good movie. Your love is a perverse one and should not exist. Anyhow.
It is so, Lovecraftian.
That is very harsh.
I wanted some good Lovecraft and, you know, very like, no, you don't want Nicolas Cage the artist. You want Nicolas Cage the clown.
The caricature.
And you got him.
Yeah. The jester.
Here. The jester.
Play our tarot cards like the Darwin.
You know. So, yes, I was very disappointed by this, even though I give it some good marks, because there's so many good things about this. We've talked about all the other performances, particularly Jolie Richardson. All of these characters feel like they are, all these actors are committing to this material and are trying to break your heart and scare you at the same time, until Nick shows up and just ruins everything. And it is beautiful to look at, and I'm so glad that Richard Stanley is back directing features. I hope he'll get to do some more work that is of this caliber, but hopefully with a leading actor who's a little bit more sympathetic to the material.
They've actually said they're going to, based on, of course, how this film performs, they would like to do a trilogy of true-to-Lovecraft films with Stanley in charge. So
long as Nicolas Cage isn't touching it, I'll be okay.
I would presume he would not.
I would hope not. So anyhow, yeah, like I said, this was a real lost opportunity, but I will at least acknowledge the good things that were in it. I have to give this, 6.5, weird looking alpacas out of 10.
Tessa, what did you think? You're my Lovecraft girl. Bring it.
Oh God. Well, they start the film out really setting the mood and the ambiance, if you will. They quote directly from the short story, which is Lovecraft's favorite of his stories. I know another adaptation of this, which was not as good. That would be 1987's The Curse, directed by David Keith, starring F. Wilf Wheaton and...
Primary Colors Out of Space?
no, I remember this movie.
And Claude Akins? Yes. So instead of... Instead of them having alpacas going crazy, they have chickens, and the chickens like attack the little sister, and there's this whole scene, and it's ridiculous. Anyways, so if you want to see another Color Out of Space movie, check out The Curse. It's really interesting. It's entertaining, not good.
They cocked it up.
They cocked it up a bit. I will high five you for that pun.
Someone did. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You high-fived him in the wrong spot. You should have aimed for the head.
Of space? Yeah, I was going to say, no. I had to have a newspaper in my hand, too.
And he's like,
no.
And double.
I'm not hitting you. I'm high-fiving your face.
And don't forget to double tap. And,
have to be sure.
So, yeah. I lost my train of thought because we were talking about smacking Chris over puns.
You're talking
about
Quill Wheaton.
Oh, Quill Wheaton and the old... Color Out of Space, The Curse from 1987. But this one definitely does it more justice. As Marco said, this is beautifully filmed. As we've all said, Nick Cage kind of flubbed it up a little bit. But don't let that dissuade you. I would still highly recommend it. I very much enjoyed it, regardless of that. And while some things were a bit heavy-handed, other things were more subtle. Some of the writing was more subtle. That reference with the TV, with Brando, they also kind of alluded to his wife's cancer. We're assuming...
Yeah, they never actually say what she has.
Nope, they surely don't. They allude to it, and we get enough context clues. We assume it's breast cancer, because they're milking goats earlier, and she says, oh, would you still love me if they cut my legs off? And things
because
like that.
He says he's a leg man.
Indeed. And he's like, well, babe, you know I'm a leg man.
Maybe they cut her ass off. I don't know.
I know. Ass cancer is not funny, guys.
Oh, sorry.
Anyways...
Someone should tell me these things before I start getting bring
up. Where's
microphone.
That rolled up newspaper? so anyways, I would highly recommend seeing this, even though some of it is a bit heavy handed, some of it is done a bit more subtle, and some of the writing is quite good. And there's a lot of nods to Miskatonic and the Necronomicon and all of that, but I would definitely give it a watch. I will give this 7.5 hydrologists out of 10.
Fair. Yeah, I think that outside of the aforementioned Cage issues, which are definitely like ones that drop this a full star and a half for me because they're that pervasively destructive. This is in every other way a really solid horror film. It's both a slow creeping ambient creep like scary film and also a cool Cronenbergian like, oh God, organic horror grossness movie. And it does both those well, as well as throwing on top of it, like, stuff you've never really seen before. This sort of psychedelic horror that, yeah. like, goes back to something like Blue Sunshine, like, back from the 70s.
Yeah, and then when they take all the color away, it's so drastic. It's great.
I like so many of Stanley's choices here. He made a really solid film with one glaring issue in it, and it's such a shame, because I think this film would be a modern horror classic if it wasn't for that. And I know there's going to be people who will be downright mad at me because of how much they are Cult of Cage. And sometimes I'm with you guys. Sometimes there are movies I'm like, yeah, Cage was exactly the right kind of crazy this movie needed. He was exactly the wrong kind of crazy for this movie, or at least as far as the choices he made during it. I'm going to give this 7.5 out of 10 times I wish I had seen Tommy Chong smoking from a bong with glowing purple or glowing fuchsia bong water in it that yes. we did not get to see. Was a missed opportunity.
That was perfect opportunity.
Exactly. Like blowing out a big cloud of fuchsia smoke. I mean, come on.
And then it morphs into different shapes.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we have a flashback.
Purple haze plays in the background.